born in 1592 in the Highlands of Scotland, and he is still alive. He is immortal, constantly facing other immortals in combat to the death. The winner takes his enemy's head, and with it, his power. We know the truth about immortals. In the end, there can be only one. May it be Duncan MacLeod, the Highlander.
Here we are, born to be kings. We're the princes of the universe.
And welcome into Let's Watch Highlander. This is Let's Watch Highlander Season 4, Episode 11, Timeless. And here with you, as we are every week, I am Travis, a.k.a. TV's Travis, and that is Audie. And how are you, sir?
Doing good, man. Like we were talking in pre-show, survived tornado warning today, so doing all right now. Just a lot of water all over the place.
Ugh, I believe it. Tornadoes are nothing to play about with, so I'm glad that it was not any worse and it was just a lot of rain. Yeah.
If anything, it's gotten a lot of the pollen down in a way for, you know.
Okay, so that is good.
Maybe a day or so.
That is helpful, because it definitely is pollen season. We finally have lost our snow, I hope, for the last time. Fingers crossed, but we'll see what goes on with that. And you and I started a new show last night. We recorded our first pilot episode / live production meeting with two of our good friends, Steven from Horseshoes and Hand Grenades and Amy Frost from Aquilo. And the four of us are talking classic TV, and that's a show called Those Were the Days.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have now doubled your podcast output for the week.
Yep.
I am adding to my stack of shows that I'm doing and dwindling away all my free time. But you know what? I have too much fun doing it. So
yeah.
I was energized after we got done last night. I was all like, yes, me too. I'm ready to go. So
I was like, let's do more. Like, we stopped recording the official show, and we kept on talking. I was like, oh, we're still talking. Okay.
Yep, I know. It's great. It's a lot of fun, and this show is super, super fun, so I'm really looking forward to kind of the discussions we're going to be able to have. But we definitely had what I think is a pretty darn good episode this week. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
But I really had a good time with this one.
Yeah, it's one of those that you don't expect it to go the way it goes, and it's really good the way it ends.
It is. I love the way this one ends because, it wraps up in such a satisfying way, while also having possibly my favorite B plot of an episode yet, which we'll get into as we talk about some of our special guests.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But before we do that, Watcher Chronicle, right? We got these Watcher Chronicles. Got to listen to them. So here's that for episode 11, Timeless.
January 29th, 1996. Claudia Jardine is in town for a concert, and wouldn't you know it, she's a friend of MacLeod's. He stopped by the bar this evening with her, and I don't think I've ever seen Dawson giddy like that. Those two spent the rest of the night playing blues. I'll admit, she is as good as her reputation. MacLeod was talking to Adam Pearson for most of the night, and they kept to themselves. Although, I thought I heard him say something about someone trying to kill Claudia. I'm not sure what that was about, but it was not easy to eavesdrop on him and Pearson. Those two are good at keeping secrets. Well, except for the secret that Mr. Adam Pearson seems to have a crush on Alexa. He moved from the bar to a table, just so she would be his waitress all night.
So, we open up, a young woman is playing a piano in a big concert hall. And while she's playing it, the camera pans up and we see some guy in the rafters with a hacksaw going to town on the rope. And then we see Duncan walk into the performance hall and he's kind of standing in the doorway watching her and she's playing the piano and suddenly she stops and gets very indignant. It's like, whoever you are, you're fired. And she's just bratty is the best way to describe her. And Duncan's like, well, if I worked for you, that would be a thing. And of course they know each other, Duncan and his friend Claudia Jardine. She is a, I guess, world-renowned musician, and she's in town for a concert of some kind. So they know each other. And as Duncan's walking up to the stage, he feels an immortal and yells at Claudia to get off the stage. And she kind of gets that same bratty, like, indignance, right? Like, even you can't talk to me that way. And just as she's saying that, a light rig falls and crushes her piano on stage, barely missing her.
Mm-hmm.
So back at the loft, Claudia's upset, and Duncan is, you know, trying to protect her, telling her, well, you can stay here for a while. She starts kind of, oh, yeah, I mean, this isn't the first time somebody's tried to kill me. That's a fun little exchange where she's naming off the ways that people have tried to kill her, and Duncan's like, no, you just ate too much caviar. No one tried to poison you. Oh, that's a great excuse for just having a bad show, like all that kind of stuff. He insists that she stay at the loft for her protection. She doesn't like the idea, but she kind of can't really say no to Duncan either. And we find out that Duncan is sort of a benefactor for her. He paid for her education at Juilliard and at the Paris Conservatory and all of this. And while they're talking, Duncan hears something downstairs and they go down, and there's a guy tuning a piano in the middle of the dojo. And she had a piano brought over so she could play there. So I guess the dojo's closed for now.
Yeah.
Or at least
part of it.
Yeah. As she's playing the piano, Duncan's like, well, I'm heading out. And she sort of invites herself along. So they head to Joe's. And before they get there, Joe is trying to explain baseball to Mythos. And Mythos is sitting at the bar. And that's just wonderful. And while he's sitting there, Mythos takes notice of the waitress, Alexa. And starts flirting with her pretty much, pretty strong. And I love
or
the line.
At least tries to.
Yeah. I love as she's talking about, she mentions his accent and where he's from, and she mentions Paris, and he's like, oh, Paris is just full of Parisians. Even the French don't like it. And Venice, and he's like, oh, the smell alone would kill you. And she, and I love the line, aren't you a little young to be so cynical? And his sort of just like, I can't answer. Yes, of course I am. Joe tries to warn him off, telling him Alexa's not his type, but you can see Mythos is, like, smitten.
Mm-hmm.
So on their way into the bar, Duncan and Claudia get out of the car. They start crossing the street when a car nearly hits them. And as it's happening, Duncan also feels an immortal's presence again. He gets Claudia out of the way. They go inside, and Joe just starts to fawn all over Claudia. He just goes full fanboy. It's
oh my gosh, it was great.
It's so wonderful. So he convinces her to come up on stage and play around with his Hammond organ and let him play the guitar, and they'll play some music. So they're jamming, playing music, and Duncan and Mythos start talking. And Mythos asks Duncan a pretty interesting question. It's the first time we've had a full on pre-immortal in an episode.
Yeah.
So I guess it's technically the second time, because there was the girl that Duncan was watching in, like, season 2, I think it was.
Yeah, who was, she ran away from her parents, blah, 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 but
yep.
He knew for whatever reason.
And so I don't know how they can tell, but Mythos knows immediately that she's going to be an immortal if she dies a violent death. And ask Duncan if she knows. Duncan's like, no, she has a chance for a normal life type of thing. Yada, yada, yada. So they talk for a little while. And then Duncan's like, no, she doesn't know. So after they jam for a bit, they head back to the dojo. And just as they're getting back there, once again, Duncan feels that immortal's presence. Turns around, and it's his friend Walter. He's like, Walter! And then we get a flashback. So Walter comes in. He's heaping praise and flowery words, very Shakespearean in his language, towards Claudia. And of course, Duncan's like, yeah, who wrote that one? You know, because he's just quoting poetry. And he convinces her to play the piano for him. And while she's playing, he and Duncan start to talk. And their conversation slowly moves to the elevator and then up to the loft while she's playing. But the conversation basically comes around to Walter is trying to trigger her immortality. He knows as well. He's been watching her for a while. and he wants to do it now while she's at her peak talents, while her genius is there. Duncan doesn't like the idea at all and tells him as much. And even at one point, finally just kicks him out. He's like, go, leave now. So a little while later, Mythos is hanging out. He's pining over Alexa, trying to get some advice from Duncan while also giving some advice about what's going on with Claudia. And is he going to tell her? All this kind of stuff. Duncan doesn't want to tell her because he thinks that she deserves a normal life, and he thinks that it should just, if it's going to happen, it'll happen. And if it's supposed to, type of thing. So there's a little bit of back and forth there. Mythos is like, just tell her, that kind of junk. Then we see Mythos back at the bar, and now he's flirting with Alexa again. And it's really interesting. It's really fun to see him so nervous. I liked that, and he does ask her out, actually, and I'm going to mention this a little bit more later, but uses one of the better pickup lines I've ever heard. She eventually kind of says, okay, we can do that, but Joe is still sort of warning Mythos away, and eventually tells him, look, she's dying. We never find out exactly why, but he's trying to warn him off. So long story short, it kind of goes back and forth. Eventually, as Duncan and Claudia are coming back to the dojo in the loft from a night out, Walter shows up with a bunch of flowers for her, hands her the flowers, and then pulls a gun and shoots her, triggers her immortality. And in doing so, robs her of her musical gift. All of a sudden, she loses the passion to play. She's at the bar trying to play, and nothing's working right. She takes to being an immortal fairly well. And Duncan is trying to explain to her that, like, look, your life has just changed completely. People are going to be coming for your head, like all this stuff. She doesn't want to hear it at all. At first, she's super excited to be an immortal, and she gets to stay young, and she gets to keep making music. But as she starts to play, she realizes she doesn't have it. She doesn't have whatever that thing is that made her a creator. And I love the line from Joe where he says, you know, maybe when the candle only burns for a short time, it burns brighter. Like something about the mortality is what does it. So Walter is adamant that she just needs to practice harder, and he just believes this because he has this belief that he can find genius and foster it. Duncan keeps telling him to back off, and finally he convinces Claudia to go to a monastery. He takes her to the monastery for somewhere where she can be safe and kind of adjust to being an immortal. And before she can have a chance to go inside, who shows up? Walter. Yeah. Threatens her, and then Duncan steps in. After he shoots Duncan, threatens her, then Duncan steps in, so they have their fight.
Yep.
And it doesn't end the way that you would think it would. We'll put it that way.
No, it doesn't.
We'll talk about it in a little bit. But the end of the episode, Claudia just sort of goes off on her own. She's going to go do her thing, find herself in the world. And Mythos and Alexa decide to go traveling the world.
Yep.
Because she only has a limited time left, and he wants to spend it with her. So they take off in a van. And I love the line from Joe right at the end where he says, you got one who's ready to or trying to die and the other one who's trying not to live or something like that. And it's just it's a great moment where with him and Duncan, where it's just sort of like, yeah, what can you do? I don't know. Let's go have a beer. And they go back in the bar.
Yeah.
When Walter was about to kill me, I was afraid to die, Duncan.
Oh, we have to start your sword training.
No. I was afraid to die, and I have to fear death in order to feel my music, in order to feel mortal.
Claudia, you're not mortal. You're in the game now.
So a special guest this week, Claudia Jardine is played by Rae Dawn Chong. I liked her in this.
Yeah.
At first, so I had a little bit of memory of this episode, and it started coming back as I watched it. And at first, I was like, oh, I'm going to hate this character because of the way she started out, that petulant child, right? And I, for some reason, my memory was that she stayed like that throughout the whole episode. And there's moments of it still through most of it, but I think she did a great job.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, you know, people like this.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
like,
sure.
You know, people who are who excel at something and are so full of themselves because of it. And mm-hmm. you can, it's one of those things where like, it almost feels like she's coming up to the line of being just over the top with it. But the, throughout the episode, she comes to that line, but she never crosses it. But it's still that cringeworthy, like, really? That's how you're going to talk to people? Really? That's how you're going to treat people?
Mm-hmm.
But when it's somebody with her talent who's used to a certain way of life and lifestyle,
yeah,
you know, like telling Duncan to call the restaurant and let him get their table. Paparazzi will be there, whatever. And yep. It's like, okay.
She's all right. Used to a certain standard of life, and her celebrity mm-hmm. has brought her certain things. So she has that air about her. But what I liked was that Radon Chong brought a great balance of that and then some vulnerability. There was a moment mm-hmm. When she says to Duncan, you know, oh, I'm going to come along too. And he's like, oh, you are? And then she gets that moment of vulnerability and she asks him, please. And it's a genuine thing. And
it's that one moment where you see she understands what's actually happening. Somebody's yep. trying to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like that, like you said, that one vulnerable moment. And it's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then you see both sides of it again when she's playing the music with Joe. And she's getting into it and she's feeling the music and you can see just that joy of creation on her face and that jam mm-hmm. and that joy of jamming that you only get when people play, you know, music together or create something like that together.
Yeah.
But then when she's back at the loft with Duncan, she kind of reverts back to like, well, you know, he's good, but he's wasting his talents working in a bar and playing mm-hmm. guitar. Like she can't completely divorce herself from that. And I liked that because it made her feel like a real person.
Yeah.
And it made her feel like a real person who is somewhat fighting themselves, which makes sense given kind of where she's at in her life and then the whole plot idea of her being a pre-immortal. And after she gets her immortality triggered, she takes to it right away, but her initial reaction is one of like excitement and joy.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes sense given who she is and what her life has been like. All she can think of is like, it's just going to be like this forever. She doesn't understand the change that's now happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
So that was why there was a little bit of growth by the end of it where she starts to understand it, but she also knows that she has to go out and do her own thing. And there's sort of a little bit of growth from Duncan where he wants to protect her. But given what's happened with Richie over the last couple of years for him, he sort of realizes that like he can't force it. He's got to let it be her mm-hmm. decision. So that's why he doesn't stop her from leaving.
Right. Well, and as he said in the episode, he's known her since she was 14 and she's mm-hmm. what, 20 something at this point. So he's known her for a long time, seen her grow up. So there's got to be, you know, that big brother protection thing, period.
Oh,
which
sure.
is Duncan. Through and through. So it's just funny to see, once again, to see his knucklehead go up against her pretentious head.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so good. But yeah, I really enjoyed her in this episode. And I really thought that she brought a lot to it and brought facets to that character, brought more off the page than a lesser actor would have brought.
Right. What I would say. Also, one of the best faking playing pianos I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Because you know she's not playing at all. Mm-hmm. Like, the way they angle the cameras and everything, it's like, yeah, that's not her playing. But she makes it look like it's one of those things where she's probably studied it enough for this show mm-hmm. to make it look like she knows what she's doing. And then when they pan around and she messes up after, when she knows she doesn't have it, like, that was beautiful. Like, turning the camera, I was like, what? Wait, what? And then she's bang, bang, bang. I was like, okay, that was smart. That was a really cool shot that they did.
After not showing her hands on the keys for almost the entire mm-hmm. episode, to finally show it and use it as the moment where she's lost it and she just starts beating on the keys. I really, really love that. So yeah, she was great. Ron Halder plays Walter Graham, and I liked him too. Given the type of character he was, and as we'll talk about in the flashbacks, he's been a stage performer and Shakespearean actor for hundreds upon hundreds of years. But what I liked about him was that overacting makes sense, right? This is all this guy has known for his entire life, is this theatrics of his life and this search for genius and this desire for that. So it completely makes sense that he would be just over the top in everything that he does. Yeah, and honestly, I've known people that have that personality anyway. So
I was going to say, if you know a true theater nut, this makes sense and you buy it. You completely buy it. Mm-hmm. And to be a theater nut for hundreds of years.
Yes, exactly.
To actually have been there around Shakespeare and stuff. It's just like, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Okay.
So yeah, that and what's great about it is it lets them play a little bit too. They can have some fun with mm-hmm. that and get to go a little more over the top. And he's always very like poetic with all of his language and just super energetic and loves, you know, Claudia and wants everything for her. And mm-hmm. when he finally gets what he wants and makes her an immortal and then she can't play music, he can't let go of that.
Yeah,
and now it becomes the obsessed part of like, no, you just need to practice harder. You need to do this more, and she can't do it.
And it's the thing where he can't physically do it himself. Mm-hmm. He's trying to get this other person to do it, and when they can't do it, he doesn't know how to handle it.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. And it was played to perfection. Mm-hmm. I also like that he's not a bad guy. He's not an evil immortal, or he doesn't have any kind of... He doesn't have an ulterior motive or like a... It is a little bit... selfish, but it's like mm-hmm. it's self-serving because he wants to feel better about himself, but mm-hmm. it's through bringing this to the world and keeping it in the world. And it's this, the self-serving part of it is he doesn't have that creative spark, but he's been around it for so long, but mm-hmm. he also wants to foster it. And so he just goes about things the wrong way. He's misguided, but he's not a bad mm-hmm. guy.
He sees himself as the muse that will inspire whoever.
Yes. Yep. Exactly that. And so it made for a little bit more sympathetic character, but also like one that you don't immediately you don't hate him either. You can you can understand where he's coming from, even if his thoughts and his process isn't the way to do it.
Well, it's funny, too, because his whole conceit introduces us to this weird conundrum that between him, Duncan, and even Mythos, they talk about it like, why not let her know what she's in for? Mm-hmm. Like, Mythos isn't like saying, go ahead and kill her, but he's like, why not tell her?
Yeah.
You know, at least let her know, and maybe she can decide whether or not to get things going or not. And, you know.
And it's the crux of the thing that he is the center of. In terms of like this idea of mortality versus immortality, should you know, should you let it happen on its own? Or is it supposed to be like, is it fated that you become an immortal, or is it fated that he's supposed to trigger the immortality? Like there's all sorts of those questions mm-hmm. you can get into as well.
Right.
So yeah. And I liked him also. Tell me if I'm wrong here, but with the hair that he had going on with the beard, did you get just a little bit of a Carl Urban look out of him? Just a little bit, especially like eyes and mouth when he would smile. Mm-hmm. His smile reminded me of Carl Urban, just a little like a young Carl Urban. Maybe it's because I just watched the Lord of the Rings movies in like the last month or so.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like, when's the last time I saw Carl Urban with long hair and a beard like that? Lord of the Rings would have to be it. So,
but yeah, so he was, Ron Holder was great. And of course, we can't talk about this episode without talking about Mythos, because he's in it and he gets the B plot. And it is a melancholy, a very bittersweet B plot, because it has just some gut wrenching moments. He gets smitten with a waitress at Joe's bar. She is dying of something, screenwriter's mm-hmm. disease, who knows, whatever it is.
Yeah.
All we're told is that she's dying. She doesn't know how long she has to live. He flirts with her. He tries to ask her out. She's like balking at it and trying to, you know, be protective of herself and like not get hurt type of thing, but he's not giving up. But what I love is to see this other side of Mythos now, because we've seen him so far. He's been the wizened older guy. He's been, doling out advice, all this kind of stuff. And here he is getting all like nervous and staring at the ground and like can't look her in the eye right away type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like a 13-year-old kid, like a kid at a middle school dance. But then he pulls out, and I loved, so his first pickup line with her is great, where she's like, well, for what? And he goes, dinner, a movie, sunset, a smile, whatever, any of those or none of them, whatever. And mm-hmm. I love that because it's just so funny. And she's like, is that line ever worked? He goes, I've never used it. But the next one is the one that kills me every time I hear it. When she asks him, why do you want to go out with me? And he looks her dead in the eye and he just says, because the alternative is unthinkable. Mm-hmm. I was like, yes, I'll go on a date with you, Mythos. I'm ready. Like, I got won over by that line. It was crazy. Uh-huh. It's such a good, like, that's that triggers the hopeless romantic in me. Of like, mm-hmm. Oh, God.
For sure. And it's really interesting to see Mythos smitten like this, because like we said, you know, he's been different. He has been the person up until now who has been Mr. Go by what you think should work. Mm-hmm. You know, be logical.
And
this
stoic.
Person needs to be taken off, period.
Yeah.
Leave emotions behind. And now he's all emotion.
Yeah, he's always been about survival and stoicism, and here he is just falling all over himself for this girl.
Mm-hmm.
So it was great to see that. And then, you know, when he comes back to the... Once he convinces her, so when Joe says, hey, she's dying, and we get the scene where he's sitting outside with his headphones in the rain, just sulking, and she comes out and mm-hmm. talks to him, and they sit and they have their cute little moment on the park bench where he speaks Russian to her. And then he mentions, well, you know, Russian doesn't work. Off. I could do Swahili. And he's like, but wait, if I was speaking Swahili, why would I want to go to whatever Russian train station? Or, you know, he's being suave. And she agrees to do the date. When he goes back to see her the next day for their date, Joe's like, yeah, she called in sick. And he gets kind of upset at Joe for not telling him where she lives type of thing. And I kind of like that too, because there's sort of, I don't know, there was just a lot of different things going on here. So for him to then go talk to her, and he shows up and he's got the plane tickets of like, look, we'll just go wherever we want. And then he mm-hmm. has that other great line he has in this episode where he's like, you can spend the rest of your life dying, or you can spend it living with me. And like, wins are over. And this grand romantic gesture that straight out of a romantic, you know, romantic movie. But mm-hmm. it works, and at the end of the episode, they're packing up a VW van to go cross country.
It's also cool to see Joe as this fatherly figure for
yes.
her.
Mm-hmm. I wish we had seen her a little more prior to this episode, just to have some background. But yeah, it was cool to see Joe with that. I did really, really like that. It's such a bittersweet whole subplot too.
Yeah, it is. It's funny, when he was first introducing her, I figured there was some kind of watcher angle to it. Like, she's a watcher and has a hard case, like maybe she's watching an evil immortals, like, yeah, I know he's gonna get killed soon because somebody's gonna take that hit. You know, something like that. But man, just the like, oh yeah, she's dying.
Rough. Plus she has that moment where they're on the front porch and Mythos is trying to convince her that this is a good idea. And when she looks at him and just says, do you ever wish that time could just stand still? Because here's this woman who has a literal ticking clock that she doesn't know how long will tick. She's just been told, for whatever disease or issue that she has, she's just been told, your time is limited and you don't know how much of it there is. Could be six months, could be a year, could be 5 years. She doesn't know. And she's talking to Mythos, who's been around for 5,000 years. And the look on his face when she said that is, again, it's why we've mentioned this every time Peter Wingfield has been in an episode, that he just gets this character. She asks him if he ever wishes that time could stand still. And here is a man who has been looked exactly and been this person for 5,000 years.
Yeah.
It's just crazy to think about. And he says it all in one look without a single word. Just loved that.
Yeah, so. Impressive that the writers would do that too. Like, not give him a line, but just say Mythos looks.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, it's,
you know,
it's like heart wrenching, but it's also one of my favorite B plots because it's there's so much humanity in it, and there's so much like feeling and emotion in it. In this moment, and I like giving a character something emotional like that to deal with. That doesn't feel. I don't know. For some reason, it doesn't feel like corny or ham-fisted either. And sure. It should. Like, by all rights, it should. But it just doesn't. And I think it's because of Peter Wingfield. I think it's just the way that he goes about it.
They make it work, for mm-hmm. sure. And, you know, props to, who was it? Ocean Hellman as Alexa, too.
Yeah.
I mean, selling it on her side, you know, only makes it work that much more. Like, if she wasn't as good as she was, it would have felt really weird for, you know, all the reasons we've talked about how good Mythos Peter Wingfield is doing his thing here. If he didn't have somebody to equally bounce off of, it wouldn't have worked nearly as well.
That's true. They have to have some kind of, it has to feel like instant chemistry, and they'd had that. And so I very much appreciated that. It's good stuff out of, I mean, the special guests are what carry this one. It's Wingfield, mm-hmm. it's Radon Chong, it's Ron Halder.
Mm-hmm.
They really made this episode work.
Yeah.
If I were Petruchio, I wouldn't give Kate the time of day. She's a creature, a shrew. It makes no sense for him to want to, let alone woo her.
So our flashback this week, so after 2 weeks of having flashbacks be like half the runtime and very integral to the plot, this week we went to kind of the opposite. It's very little flashback. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't do anything for the plot necessarily. It just gives us background on Walter.
Yep. And his relationship with Duncan.
Yep. So it's in England in 1663, and Duncan is in a stage show doing Shakespeare with Walter, and he's dressed as Mary in Taming of the Shrew. Wearing a wonderful dress and the wig that was in the episode that started the season. His the Donna, I think was her name, right? The one that he was supposed to marry or was supposed to marry his cousin. That was the same wig that Adrian Paul was wearing for this. I love that long curly nice. Red hair.
Oh my gosh.
But I very much enjoyed, and these were short. Mm-hmm. And it was just basically Walter and Duncan, and we get to learn that Walter is obsessed with Shakespeare, and mm-hmm. he's always reading stuff out, and his perceived personal failures as a writer,
mm-hmm.
And how he feels like everything he writes is drivel, and he's been around all these great minds, he spent time with Shakespeare and all this, but he can't ever do it himself, right? So he's sort of the Salieri to Mozart.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, but more of a muse than that. Mm-hmm. But it's also some good comedic moments with Duncan, obviously dressed in that ridiculous dress that he was wearing.
Yeah.
And I love in the second one when the drunk guy shows up.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you took my role. He chose you because you're younger and prettier than me. And he like turns around. Is that so? Like, it was a great little moment there, and they have a little sword fight.
Just before that, when Walter, he's tangling some stuff up, and you're like, what is he doing? He's like, and then he walks over to Duncan. And
oh, yeah.
Yep. You know, giving Duncan some
fixes the bosoms.
Boobage there. It's just like, what is he doing? What is he? Oh, okay. And even Duncan's like, what are you doing?
Okay. You're really good at this.
Yeah, exactly.
What I liked about the flashbacks was it was used as a way to flesh out the characters. They were funny.
Mm-hmm.
They were simple. I mean, they set them in the middle of a field with just like a cart, basically.
Yeah.
So it was cheap to do. But also, mm-hmm. but it didn't feel cheap. And
right.
they didn't overuse them. The meat of the story mm-hmm. and the B plot were set in present day, so don't waste runtime on the flashbacks. And they didn't. They're only a few minutes,
yeah.
and I appreciate that. Like it was.
I mean, like we say of good flashbacks, they were exactly the amount that we needed and nothing more.
Yes, exactly that. That is when the flashbacks are right. It's when they go too long or they're too short. We have seen two, and they don't mm-hmm. give us enough, and we don't need. Because Walter's story is more about his obsession with finding this genius in the world of art and cultivating it, mm-hmm. we don't need to know more than like he's been like this for at least a few hundred years and a
right.
few hundred years before that. Let's focus on the present day and focus on Claudia and that all that stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was definitely something that I appreciated. It's good flashbacks. They don't always have to be long. They don't always have to move plot along. They can just...
Right.
I mean, I play a little blues, and I would love to play some music with you.
Oh, Claudia plays some blues. Not well, but passable.
How would you know? You're tone deaf.
So no Richie this week. He's off to parts unknown doing whatever Richie does when he's not in the episodes. Probably racing bikes somewhere, knowing him.
Yeah.
But we do have Joe. Joe is back. It's our first time seeing him in a few weeks. And, I mean, look, any episode with Joe Dawson in it is better. He doesn't have a ton of screen time, but his time on screen is utilized well. Like, I like when we come to his... It's almost all in the bar, but when we come to the bar the first time, I just love him trying to explain baseball to Mythos. And
my thing is, how did Mythos miss baseball?
I mean,
I'm okay with it. It's, you know, it's one of those quirky things that, like, it's entirely possible he's never been close to the United States at all to actually know what baseball is, or, you know, it's,
I mean,
being
yes,
an immortal who's
been
around the world, he could not care about baseball. Like, he could be, like, super into cricket because he got into cricket and sees baseball as the inferior, as so many from the United Kingdom do.
I mean, it's definitely possible, but I know that they tend to play fast and loose with what Mythos does and doesn't know, because I think it's later on, there's an episode where he talks about sharing the stage with Julius Caesar and Mick Jagger.
Right.
He talks about, like, Chubby Checker and so he makes a lot of references. So they, but it's just such a funny moment, because at first you're like, what is Joe? Oh, that's why. And then to see him just fanboy out over Claudia was super fun, because he was just like a little kid and he was just like, come on, please come play music with me. Please, 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 please. And then getting to watch Jim Burns play guitar too.
Yeah. That moment I love, because one, it shows us that he will fan out over a fellow musician.
Absolutely.
And two, it establishes just how famous Claudia really is and how far she's come. So, like, in that one moment, we get Joe fanboying out because of a musician and establishing just what kind of musician Claudia actually is. It's like one of those little genius writing things. It's like, okay, yeah, perfect, guys. Well done on that one.
Yep, you're right there. And also, it also makes Joe more multidimensional, right? Because we know how important the Watchers are to him. But it's nice to get this moment of, and we know that music is important to him. And this just helps to reinforce, like, music is a big thing in his life.
And
I love that. And then, like I say, Jim Burns got to play guitar. And I'll watch that all day. I'll listen to him play. I love listening to blues guitar. So... that was really cool. I mean, it's not a ton, but he also has, like, some great lines when she is at the bar later and she's having trouble with playing and everything. His line I mentioned earlier, you know, I guess when the candle doesn't burn as long, it burns brighter. And sort of this idea of, like, oh, mortality's got a point to it after all, type of thing. And not being immortal doesn't solve everything.
Interesting that Joe, the musician, would get it and understand it more than anybody else in the room.
Yeah. Yep. Kind of makes sense, but it's not something that I would have thought of initially. I also like how, as you mentioned earlier, he's kind of a little bit fatherly towards Alexa and sort of protective of her. And even at the very end, he's reluctant, but he also doesn't. He knows he can't stop her. He's not going to try and stop her from leaving, but he has this, he's not sure
he's
the right thing.
He's bummed out.
He's very bummed out. And meanwhile, you know, you got Claudia who's, like, off to parts unknown, and I like how Duncan's like, you get a watcher on her right away, and he goes, don't worry. Don't worry. We got it. So it's good stuff from, I mean, Joe in any episode's better. An episode with just a little bit of Joe is better than an episode with no Joe.
Absolutely.
And Richie not being in this episode, I think, was the good call for it. I don't think this particular script is not benefited at all with Richie. Because one, it'd be too crowded. There's too many characters to follow at that point. but also even if you took out the Mythos Alexa subplot and you gave that runtime to something involving Richie or having Richie involved in the episode, because Claudia is this younger, headstrong, petulant person, I feel like that would clash with Richie a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we would end up, I just feel like it could have very easily ended up with like cringy Richie and her and something going on where there's either like a forced romance or this like bitterness between them, or I don't know what. Like I don't envision a way where that writes itself out very well in my
opinion. It would have been a different flavor of what we had last week. And so there's just no way you need to do that.
Yeah, that's a good point too. I didn't think about that, but you're right. It would definitely just be more of the same, and why not go mm-hmm. in a different direction? So that was nice to then let Mythos have that subplot and give him a right. little send-off too. Mm-hmm. Because again, we sort of talked about how they're experimenting with different side characters in this season. So like Amanda showing up for a few episodes, we got Mythos for a couple of episodes, and it's a nice way to write him out without him just not being there. So
right.
And because Richie's just living around, he can just come and go as he pleases.
Right. And there's a couple times where you almost feel like without Richie, then we've got Claudia and Duncan's relationship that we're talking about. And there's a couple times where it feels like Claudia thinks there could be something more there with Duncan. But you know from Duncan's side, that absolutely is not happening mm-hmm. at all. Like you could tell he's definitely uncle, big brother type, not at all romantically thinking about her at all. But he still cares about her because of, you know, knowing her for so long.
Sure.
But there's definitely a couple times where she's like, mm-hmm.
Oh, he's like,
mm-mm. Yeah. And they handle it with just that little bit of, it's not cringe, but it's just that little bit of like, there could be something there, but there's not anything there.
Yep. And it starts to get to where it could get awkward before Duncan's like, no. Like, you're, mm-hmm. you, no. And I like it's well done. It's done with a deft hand. And it's also, again, the strength of the performers. Radon mm-hmm. Chong is able to kind of bring that out in a way. And Adrian Paul just knows Duncan so well at this point that it works.
Right.
So.
And they've got good chemistry as these characters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree with you completely there. So, yeah, it was great to see Joe back. And we miss Richie, but he'll be back.
He'll be back.
Why do you want to go out with me?
Because the alternative is unthinkable.
So our final fight for this week, we had a fight during the flashback, which mm-hmm. was fun. It was comedic. Duncan wearing that dress. He just got his his bosoms all done up, and all of that. And then he's fighting with the drunk guy. That was pretty cool. But the final fight itself, I really really liked this one.
Oh my gosh.
Just the character of Walter being a stage actor for as long as he was and a fencer really knew what he was doing. And I liked was how the episode was building to this moment, right? So it kept getting more and more antagonistic, and Walter is getting more obsessive, and Duncan's telling him to back off. Mm-hmm. And we come up to the blow off, and Walter shows up, shoots Duncan right away, and starts to threaten Claudia. And then gets...
Unfortunately, he didn't shoot him in a vital enough spot.
Right.
Because Duncan got up quick.
Yep. And as he's getting ready to... Or as he's threatening her, suddenly there's a katana blade at his neck. And Duncan's mm-hmm. like, you, me, let's go.
Yep.
And I like Walter's arrogance where he's like, I was always the better fighter. And to Duncan saying, well, I've learned a few things since then. Because, you know, the last time they fought was like the 1600s.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good fight. It tells a good story.
Oh my gosh, it's a good fight.
Such good choreography. They're just so good.
When Walter does that behind the back thing, mm-hmm. I was just like, oh my gosh, dude knows what he's doing with a sword.
He definitely was a good fencer. And mm-hmm. I was reminded a little bit of the Wesley Inigo fight in Princess Bride. Like that level of fencing and kind of choreography. Uh-huh. And we saw Duncan switching up and going from a two-handed grip to more fencing style to match
him,
which is cool.
Which happens here and there. Like, every once in a while, you'll see, and this is obviously Adrian Paul just kind of flexing a little bit, mm-hmm. but showing us just how good Duncan is, that he can not only, you know, do the what we assume the typical kind of Japanese sword fighting style, but he'll switch it up to whoever he's fighting and fight them in their style,
yeah,
which is super cool. Again, a super flex. And then Duncan, you know, will take them out.
Yeah. It's like, not only am I going to
beat them, at least.
Yeah. I'm not only going to beat you, I'm going to beat you using your style. So take
right.
that. But yeah, it was a good fight. And then it doesn't end mm-hmm. the way that you would think, with the way that the episode has been building. It ends in a very MacLeod way, which is there is antagonism between the two of them, but mm-hmm. Walter isn't an evil guy.
Right.
And they were friends. And Duncan sort mm-hmm. of knows that, like, this guy isn't a bad guy. He's misguided. So he gives mm-hmm. him the opportunity. He doesn't immediately take his head like we've seen Duncan do when he just hates somebody.
Right.
He gives him the opportunity, and of course, Walter still tries to get out of it, right? Doing the whole fingers crossed behind his back as Duncan's making
fingers.
Promise. But then he's Duncan, like, makes him
show me your hands.
Yep. And once he shows him his hands, and sort of there's like this unspoken moment where the two of them realize where things are, then they just sort of fall back into bantering with each other.
Uh-huh. Yep. It's like two guys getting into a fight over the stupidest thing.
Yes.
Two good friends getting into a fight over something really dumb.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's like, who's in control of somebody else's life? And mm-hmm. Walter's like, I need to be in control. And Duncan's like, no, she needs to be in control. And Duncan and Walter's like, no, I need to be in control. And Duncan's like, swing, no, she's in control. Back off.
Yep. Yeah. It's two guys at a house party. You know, and they drink a little bit too much and they start fighting. And then as they're fighting and like they fall down the couple of stairs, they realize this is dumb. What are we doing?
Yeah, exactly.
They brush each other off and then they just walk mm-hmm. off and have another beer together. Like, it was great.
And then the brilliant little thing that they do is Walter has a little line and Duncan's like, oh, who wrote that one? And Walter's like, well, I did. And Duncan's like, really?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay. Let's throw on top of all of this, hey, maybe Walter finally found his spark. Duncan yes. notices it. Maybe that's where Walter goes off after this episode.
Yeah, I'd like to think that he goes off and kind of does some playwriting and gets some stuff sold.
Uh-huh.
And sort of starts to feel better about himself. So, yeah, it's a good fight and it's a good way to end that. And the episode itself, the whole thing is very yeah. solid. Very, very well done. Excellent mm-hmm. performances from everybody.
Yeah.
Joe's back. The main plot had some great philosophical questions. I liked how they toyed a little bit with mm-hmm. the idea of immortality and mortality and sort of that creative spark and the fact that Claudia yeah. loses her passion for music, loses the thing that made her a musical genius when she becomes an immortal. But then the threat to her life is what makes her realize that it's that fear that gives her that spark. And so mm-hmm. when she leaves at the end of the episode, part of the reason that she just leaves is that she needs to have that constant fear of this could be my last day, this could end at any point, in order to fuel yeah. her music, which is crazy to think about. But, you know, at the same time, like, I get it, you know, in some yeah. ways. So it was a good way to utilize that. Plus I had
mm-hmm.
possibly my favorite B plot. The stuff with Mythos was heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
And it's sad, and you've got the 5,000-year-old man and the woman with a year or less to live.
Mm-hmm.
And just that whole thing of, like, here's a guy who can go anywhere, has gone everywhere, has seen just about everything, but he is taken with this woman. And then on top of that, he just wants her to live her days out.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of wallowing and as he puts it, you can spend the rest of your life dying or you can spend the rest of your life living and with me, yeah. let's go. And so he just takes her.
Especially with someone like Mythos, who knows how many people he's seen end
right.
like this.
Yeah,
that's way also too true. Soon. Like, it's like he's seen this and now it's happening to somebody he's actually smitten with. I don't want this to end badly or end in a way where they're just stuck in their self. Like,
mm-hmm.
he wants her to have more than that for her final days.
Yeah, and we don't know how long it's been since he's been with anybody either, so it kind of makes yeah. sense that he's awkward but also like very interested in continuing this on.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's got that amazing line of, you know, the alternative is unthinkable, like
mm-hmm.
but whoever wrote that's some Notebook level romance going on yeah. right there.
And then still Duncan understanding, like, you know, having been with, why am I blanking on her name right now? Tessa.
Yeah.
Like, just understanding that emotion with a mortal person and dealing with that. It's like,
yeah,
go good. For it.
Really, really good stuff. I enjoyed this episode, bringing Joe back and watching Joe fanboy out, but also have some good moments where he's like, yeah, the candle that burns brighter doesn't burn as long, and know, all that kind of stuff. And him being very fatherly towards Alexa and kind of protective of her, but also, you know, begrudgingly just sort of being like, all right, go do your thing, you crazy kids.
Pretty much.
And we end it with Joe and Duncan heading into the bar. Like, the two dads are going to go off and have some beers now. It's good stuff. Very much enjoyed this episode. Very, very much. So next week is episode 12, The Blitz. I don't remember much about this one, but I'm pretty sure that whatever flashback portions of it are in during the Blitz in London, that's, I think Amanda might be back, but I'm not sure.
Sure. I mean, you would assume the Blitz of London would be involved, but
I feel like otherwise, why would you call it that?
Right. Exactly.
Especially when the show came out. So yeah, that is going to be next week. If you want to hang out and watch us record this live and be in the chat room like Danny Ora or Ace Tigress, you can do that. We record live Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern time, twitch.tv/TV's Travis. And then the show comes out as a podcast, anchor.fm/Let's Watch Highlander, or anywhere that you get your podcast. Just search for Let's Watch Highlander and look for Audie's amazing art, whether it's him and I back to back with swords, or that week's that sword of the week. That is or what you want to look for.
Weapon of the week, depending.
Yeah, weapon of the week.
How it goes.
It's a good point. But yeah, definitely check that out. And I am on Twitter at TVS Travis, TVS Travis. And Audie, you are, what is your Twitter again?
It's Oddly Normal One with the one spelled out.
There you go. And you post your art up there, not just the Highlander art, but your Ted Lasso stuff's been great.
Yeah, that's been fun.
How many days you got left of that? You're doing 40 days of Ted Lasso?
Yep, so today is day 30, so I've got 10 more after today.
All right. And Audie and I are also doing a new show. If you like listening to us talk about a 90s TV show, well, come on and listen to us talk with a couple of friends of ours, Stephen and Amy, about classic TV in general, whether it's The Honeymooners or All in the Family or The Simpsons or basically anything that we would consider classic, more than 20 years old, from the dawn of television up through the late 90s. We're picking a topic every month. And we're going to pick episodes and talk about it this month. We're starting off with pilots. And we are starting off with the pilot for Elf.
Yeah.
And I can't wait. That's going to be super fun. That show is called Those Were the Days. And you can find that at anchor.fm/Those Were the Days Show. Or we're also on Twitter at Those Days Show. So check that out. That's Audie and I and our friends Amy and Steven. And the four of us just want to talk old school TV with you and also get your thoughts on it too and see what you think of these old shows as well. So definitely come hang out for that. And again, this show will be out on Thursday at anchor.fm/Let's Watch Highlander. We are coming up on we are at the halfway point of season two or season four. Four, not two.
I was going to say,
Season four. That is the episode for this week. Next week is The Blitz. So until then, remember that there can be only one person that Ethos gets smitten with.
Verily we say.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.